You're listening to Digging the Dirt, the allotment show with Russ and Jake. And welcome to the show. This is Russ in Lancashire, and I'm on my own this week. I'm afraid Jake isn't with us. Jake has been moving house, and right at the very last minute, Jake has sent me a message to say he's done his back in. A speedy recovery to you, Jake. I know he'll be listening. And see, what you should do, Jake, is more digging. I know you're a fan of No Dig, but if you dig a little bit more, your back will be a bit more robust, and you'll be able to lift all these boxes. I think this is the second time Jake has moved in the last 18 months. It's just too much, really, but all the very best. Now, on the show today, we've got a very special guest coming up in a little while. That's Anna Matthews. Anna is a professional gardener and a volunteer for the Gardening for Disabled Trust. So we're going to find out all about Anna, all about the trust as well. So that's coming up very shortly. And I'm pleased to say, of course, the weather is getting just that little bit better. I finally got out onto the allotment. We've had such a lot of rain up here in the northwest. So I've sown some peas in the greenhouse, got the heated propagator going. There's plenty of seeds in there now, some herbs, coriander, some basil, oregano as well, and some lots of flower seeds from a weekly gardening magazine as well to try those out. And I've started a bit of digging too. Now the beds are drying out a little bit, and I've just this week put up my very first fruit cage. Just the frame, of course, at this stage, but I lost just too much fruit to the birds last year, so hopefully that will be a thing of the past now. So finally we're getting out there, and it's getting a little bit busier, I'm pleased to say. Now, I said we've got a very special guest, and we have Anna Matthews on the show today. Now, Anna is a professional gardener and, as I said, a volunteer for the Gardening for Disabled Trust. Now, welcome to the show, Anna.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Yes, great. Thank you very, very much for joining us here. Now, before we talk about the great work of Gardening for Disabled Trust, just tell us a little bit about your story and how you got into gardening yourself.
Well, I've always loved gardening, and Mum and Dad had a big garden, so my brother and I helped them when we were kids. Yeah. And my brother ended up going to college and he did all the things like the mowing and hedge cutting and strimming. So he ended up going to college, and he now owns and runs Norton Garden Machinery business. Right. And I preferred to work in the garden, the flowers and in the vegetable garden. So my dad said to me, if you're going to spend most of your life doing a job you enjoy, do something you enjoy.
Absolutely.
So yeah. I thought, well, I went to school, but I did spend most of my life looking out the window. So I thought being indoors is not for me.
No, that's great.
I thought, yeah. And I remember as a kid that I used to spend quite a lot of our holidays with my nan, and I used to go to my great uncle's allotment. Yeah. And I thought it was just a fabulous place to find all these like-minded people, and we used to go up there and harvest all the fruit and veg and yes. Wrap it in newspaper. I mean, I realise now why he didn't want all the soil from the potatoes going all over the leeks he was bringing home.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and yeah. Then I used to go home and help prepare the meals with the veg and the fruit with my nan and her sister. So that was just, I suddenly realised I love gardening.
Yes.
I didn't want to be indoors, so gardening it was.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, so you got an opportunity to do what you love doing professionally then.
Yes. So I left school at 16.
Yeah.
And it was at a time when you couldn't go straight to college. You had to have practical experience. So I joined the YTS scheme, worked in a garden centre, and then did day release college. And then after that, that was for 2 years. Finished that and then did a 3-year BTEC national diploma, and one of the middle year you spent in a placement, and I was lucky enough to work in a private garden up near Bristol, and they were real plants people. And they just love having one of everything. It was such a good thing to learn. And that was great. And then, so I finished college and thought, right, now this is the beginning of my career. I want a fabulous job to start. So I waited a few weeks, and this fabulous opportunity came up to be the sole gardener on Brecu, which is a small island in the Channel Island. So that's where I went.
I've looked that up on the map, because I'm sorry
to
say
it?
Only just, it's a little dot, isn't it? Just off Sark.
It's a 70-acre rock, and it's usually under the S of Sark.
That's right. Yeah. So that's where you ended up.
Wow. 18 months, and then during the time I was there, it was sold to the Barclay twins.
Yes.
And the reason I ended up leaving was they built their new castle on the garden. So they did say I could stay until they'd finished and then garden. But I thought, you know, it's my first job. My yes. career's, you know, starting out. I need to go and do something else.
So, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, just get a bit more experience, really. But what a place to start.
Oh, it was amazing. It really was a great opportunity. Although one day I did find all my cabbages blown into a heap at the corner of the garden. Oh, so that was... Because when it was blowing over there, it was windy.
A bit exposed, yeah, absolutely. And then you worked for a very famous rock star. Can you tell us anything about that at all?
Yeah, I came back to the mainland and then went to work for Elton John at his old Windsor estate. I was in charge, I was the assistant head gardener there, and I was in charge of the Rosemary Veery designed potager, which is an ornamental fruit and vegetable garden, but it was about an acre, but yes. God, was that, you know, it was really productive, so that was really nice. And then you got involved in other elements of the garden as well, so that was all, a lot of it was Rosemary Veery designed.
Yes, and she then, worked at Highgrove as well, didn't she?
That's right, yes. She wrote many books. Yes. And I mean, Elton's gardens were in there as well. Yeah, and she had her own home place as well that she opened to the public. So that was a real experience. And then later on, Sir Roy Strong was brought in, but it was a completely different concept. We'd gone from sort of billowing sort of cottage gardens.
Yes.
And then Sir Roy Strong brought the sort of hard landscaping paths, very formal hedging and statuary. It was a complete change, but, you know, why not?
Why not? And did Elton take a keen interest in the garden and gardening?
Oh, he really did. Yes. Really? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's a bit sort of dramatic to say, but it was a sanctuary, really.
Yes.
You know, he could come home and shut the gates and then just be in his own private world and, you know, shut himself away and just enjoy it. Yeah. So you often find him just wandering about, and he was very affable and very interested.
Excellent. And I've got to ask you, what's his favourite fruit and veg?
I think he liked the variety. Yeah. But one of the things was, he'd grown up with his nan and his mum.
Yes.
Yeah. And I can remember one time we had quite a funny laugh about rhubarb. Because I'd obviously taken in some rhubarb because we'd forced it, and he was so chuffed. It was always like when you have the first of the crop sort of thing.
Yes.
And of course I'd taken in the forced rhubarb. Yeah. Of course he was so pleased to have it, and we were talking about recipes, and he remembered it, you know, as a child in the bottom of the garden.
Gosh.
And we were trying to remember, because I remember, and I'm not sure whether it's my mum's recipe or my nan's, but it was something we always called rhubarb whirligig. And it's a recipe where you have stewed rhubarb with some sort of suet pastry that's rolled up in like a Swiss roll, then cut into slices and then put on the top and cooked.
Gosh.
So I think he got his cook to come up with something similar sort of thing, just because he liked the sound of it. So, yeah.
Gosh. So it revived your nan's recipe.
Now my nan's recipe, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Isn't that good? Great stuff.
Yeah, and he was just, you know, he's just a lovely person and, you know, was very interested.
Terrific.
And just relaxed.
Yeah, yeah. And your current job, so what are you up to now? What have you done sort of in between that and where you are now?
Yeah, in between that, it was just mainly moves for career and, you know, it was always progression. And then 16 years ago, I moved down to East Sussex and started work on the private estate here.
Yes.
And it's like... Oh, well, I don't see myself moving, unlike Jake, I don't see myself moving.
No.
Because I've been here 16 years now. And my bosses have turned into my best friends. It's really
terrific.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So,
your gardening there, Anna, is that fruit and veg or is it the whole array and flowers?
It's a real sort
shrubs.
Of mix. I mean, we grew fruit and veg, and the vegetable garden became quite productive, and they liked growing their own as well, sort of thing. So we realised that we were just producing way too much for two people. So they grow a lot more of their veg in a small vegetable garden.
Right. Yeah.
And then I've turned the main vegetable garden now into a cutting garden. So that's really interesting. So at the moment, there's sort of the daffodils and a hyacinth coming on.
Yes.
And then later on, it'll go through sort of tulips and then on to, you know, the summer stuff. So we'll have lilies and roses, gladioli later on, and alstroemerias all the time sort of thing. And
so pretty much
adelias,
year,
they just take
all year round.
The frost.
Yeah. So pretty much all year round as a cutting garden?
No, we sort of stop about, well, whenever the frost comes. So that's variable these days. You can...
Yeah,
you can never quite tell. So you get all straggly things at the end, and they keep going. I mean, we've only just lost in the snow the last of the dahlias, really, now.
Wow.
So then, you know, and it's just starting now.
Yes. Yeah.
Daffodils and things. So there is, you know, there's a lean period over Christmas and things, and we don't try and force bulbs. It's just too arduous.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just the natural growth of seasonal flowers and vegetables.
Yeah. And we grow sort of annuals. So you've got sunflowers and, sweet peas and things. So cosmos.
Yeah. I've just got sweet peas growing now. I just popped down the greenhouse before and they're all popping up there. So it's still a thrill, isn't it? When you see, like you said, you know, the first appearance of something you've grown, you know, it's still that.
Yeah.
That
although
thrill.
I must say that I've got to confess, I have given up growing sweet peas now because we've always got mice this time of the year.
Oh,
so
right. Yeah.
I've given up. And to be honest, I could buy a pot from the garden centre.
Yeah. Yeah.
In another few weeks when the mice have all left and gone out, and then grow them on, and then I use them. I'm afraid I've given up trying to beat the mice. They've beaten me.
Excellent. Now, I believe you've been pretty well travelled as well.
I have. I've been a member of the Professional Gardens Guild for years and years now. Yeah. And they've often offered study tours to go travelling as a group. So it's all like-minded gardeners. And so over the years, I've been to like Madeira, I've been South Africa, the south of France, China, Japan. So, yeah, very lucky.
Madeira, I've been to Madeira several times, and that's just, well, they call it the floating garden, don't they, there? It's beautiful.
Yeah, once you've got over the landing, but I think they've extended the runway now. That was
The first time I went was about 25 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit frightening as you're coming into land, I've got to say.
Well, at the time, I think they've extended it. It was a very short runway, and if you didn't stop, you were back in the sea. And you sort of fell out the sky, and I thought, crikey. But no, I mean, Madeira was just amazing. It really was.
And what do they call it? Are they levadas? All the water channels,
isn't
it?
All the walks and the canals, wasn't it, with the water?
Yeah,
a little, sort of rills almost of
that's
water,
it.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I remember those. So tell
and
us about
non-horticultural. Did you do the come down in the basket?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you know the first the first time I had the bright idea. Don't ask me why. We'll walk down, right? And you don't realize,
do you?
You don't realize how steep it is. I mean, how those people run. Steering those, whatever you call them, the baskets that you sit in. How they do that, I don't know. But yeah, did you go down?
I think it's slightly more important. How did they ever going to stop with those cars that used to crisscross?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, we've done that. That was one tick in the box there. That's right.
Yeah.
But tell us about...
I think you really need to do it once, though, don't you?
Yes, yeah. And if you go back, don't have the bright idea to walk down once you get up.
No.
It's a bit hard on the calf muscles, I can tell you afterwards. So tell us about China and Japan. You know, that's one place I've always wanted to go to see the cherry, follow the cherry blossom there.
We couldn't have timed it to perfection anymore. It was spot on, and I've never seen anything like it. Everywhere was just coated in pink flowers.
Gosh.
And then you'd walk down a street and they had them as street trees. And it just looked like confetti on the floor. It was amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
And then all the parks had these, you know, cherry trees. And all these families all came out. And it was every age group, you know, babes in arms up to sort of, you know, the really oldies, and they all came together. They all sat together under the trees. They all had these picnics. And then when they all went, they cleared everything up and just left it like perfection. But it's a real massive event. And even the youngsters today, they all want to be seen with the pink, you know, the little cherry blossom.
Yes.
And they were all driving around in their cars, all these souped up cars, music blaring like, you know, teenagers anywhere.
Yeah.
But they were still driving down these town centres under the cherry trees.
Gosh.
It was stunning. And their gardens elsewhere were just fabulous.
Absolutely. Yes.
And when I came back, because they do amazing things with moss, they use make it into landscapes and they use different colours. Like we would look at a patchwork of fields, they make it as a small landscape in their gardens. And they sort of, they recreate the same landscape that they see outside. It's
incredible.
Not all that you see, like the stones and the gravel that's raked.
Yes.
There's some of these other. So I must say, when I came back from that trip, I embraced moss then.
Yeah. This is what I've heard, you know. And I saw a program. I don't know if it was one of Monty Don's programs, I don't know, but and it was obviously following the cherry blossom trail, but they did spend a lot of time looking at this moss and how they manicure it is the only way I could describe
the cherry. You go there to see the cherries and the gardens of contemplation where they have got the sort of classic stones and the gravel raked and things.
Yes.
But these landscapes where they use moss and trees and it, unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, I think there's a lot to be said for, we've got in this country sometimes, we've got quite sort of sterile outdoor rooms now of the fashion sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a shame we don't look to China and Japan because the way they do their small gardens are amazing.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, if you go to like Hampton Court or Chelsea and you look at the small gardens there, the crowds that people looking at the gardens are mostly around the Japanese and the Chinese exhibits sort of thing. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
And then China was all these small gardens with, you know, views, tiny views out. They're like little courtyard gardens, but it was amazing. Water features. And you'd look through a round window and a slightly different square window over there and you'd see a different view.
Yes. Yeah.
There was sort of significance in the paving. It incredible, really.
It
was,
yeah. And all very calming, aren't they, as well? Always very calm.
Unbelievable. Yes. Yeah. And I understood the concept of bonsai because I never understood that before I went to China.
Yeah.
But to meet these gardeners who get together and then go on an expedition up a mountain to find an sort of often quite old, small, gnarly tree.
Yes.
And they bring it back. They have special permission to bring it back. And then they look after it. And then they put it in these mini landscapes because they can't keep going back to up into the mountains. So they make these mini landscapes down in the valley sort of thing and in their gardens.
Based on what they've seen. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is just recreating it in a small style. To see these Chinese people, they pass these trees on from one sort of like elder to down to the next generation.
Yes.
And it really is a massive responsibility to look after a tree and they treat it like a member of their family.
Absolutely.
You know,
yes.
I don't necessarily ever need to have a bonsai or make a mini landscape in my own garden, but I really understood it and you could really see what it meant to them.
Wonderful. Now your partner is a professional gardener as well, so it's all in the family.
Yes, so Quentin Stark, he's head gardener over at Hull Park, which is just over in Kent, a family-run garden.
Yes.
And it's not far from Sissinghurst and Great Dixter, and
it's really famous
for its bluebells. But
wonderful.
I think it rivals Sissinghurst and Dixter, and it's less well-known, so it's well worth a visit.
Well, there you go. Everybody's going to flock there once we get this lockdown.
And Quentin owes me a drink for that.
There you go. You remind him. So talking about lockdown, how was lockdown for you and work? Did anything change at all? Or as it was like a private garden, was it business as normal, really?
I mean, I don't want to be flippant because I do understand that, you know, for a lot of people, it has been very different. But it turns out I've been living in my own bubble for 16 years. You know, it was very odd working for my bosses. You know, we've been good friends over the years and then suddenly decide slightly do social distancing. It was it was quite odd to take that aspect into a garden in your everyday life, and even sort of simple things like handing over the post, you know, to them, the mail. You know, it was just, we just sort of were a bit more cautious, which is just odd. But we had a lot less trades come into the estate, so that meant that there was more opportunity for gardening. And you just took more notice of your surroundings because you weren't going places. Nobody planned holidays. Nobody could go anywhere. So you appreciated what you, like so many other people have. You know, you really appreciated what was on your doorstep.
Yep.
And we are under the flight path of Gatwick. So with the planes stopping, you really notice the birds. And I don't know whether it's true or not. I feel that the flowers, you could really smell them more. Now, I don't know whether that's just general less pollution or whether it's something in my head that tells me it's cleaner.
The other thing we've heard about with the lockdown, especially last year, was more ingress of wildlife, because everywhere's that much quieter, fewer people. And just this abundance of wildlife.
Yeah, we've always got an ingress of
probably what you don't
wildlife
want.
Here. And hearing you mention about you putting up your fruit cage.
I
dispensed with fruit cages many years ago because I spent half my life releasing blackbirds to materialise.
That got in there, I know you've got
to be careful. In my own garden home here, I have planted quite a lot of fruit bushes so that I share it with the wildlife and I might get a meal full. But in the summer, I sleep with my bedroom window open. And it is so funny because the fruit bushes happen to be underneath the bedroom window. And the badger used to come in and eat them when they were ripe so that you knew I've got to go and pick my own gooseberries tomorrow.
Really? Gosh.
But this year, I don't know what got into him. He started on the gooseberries early and you could hear him. And then you could hear him at the end going... And it was just because they were so underripe. They were so sharp.
A bit sharp. Isn't that funny?
So funny to hear. And I thought, do you know what? I'm losing that crop out there, really.
Yeah.
But lying here, listening to him, chomping away and thinking, how is he eating them?
Worth losing them, isn't it? Just to hear that going on under your window.
Oh, it was, incredible. You had to laugh. What can you do? I mean, absolutely. Even if I put up a cage, he's going to just come in.
Well, so they'll just force their way through it, won't they? Yeah, absolutely. Now, for people like myself and Jake, we garden really for relaxation, you know, after work and whatever. As you're a professional gardener, what do you do to relax? Do you garden more or do you go completely opposite?
A garden home here. And then also I enjoy metal detecting with some friends.
Oh, terrific.
When we're allowed.
Yes.
Mudlarking on the Thames.
And going
to like beaches and sort of picking up bits of sea wash glass and fossils if I can find them and just, you know,
Wonderful. So just give us an insight. Some of your top finds then, mudlarking and as a metal detectorist.
Well, mudlarking was all sorts of... Oh, military buttons, that was quite interesting.
Gosh.
And bits of old pipe and things, that's always fun. So we won't go mudlarking on the Thames, but you do need a permit. And I think if anybody went, I would, you know, you really do need to go with a mudlarker because it looks quite benign and it is lovely, but you do need your wits around you.
Because of the tide, I guess,
And with the barrier as well.
Yes.
Where they often work on it, like the tide goes out and then stays out because they're doing some work on the barrier.
Ah, right.
And then if you don't have your wits about you, because the tide comes in quick anyway, it comes, if they've held it back, then they suddenly open the gates.
Yes.
It's not super fast, but it's fast enough. If you're busy there trying to find a bit of china or a bottle or something.
Yeah, you know, your head down.
If you don't know where your exit is, you could really get caught out quite quickly.
God.
And especially in the mudlarking community, you could be made to be quite a fool for having to call somebody out to be rescued. So I look forward to the day that, you know, we're allowed to go back mudlarking again.
Oh,
so
that's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, going out with the metal detector is just local.
Yes. Yeah, wherever you can get permission and whatever. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, we must talk about gardening for disabled trust. And and this is how I found you, really. I think either yourself or one of your colleagues there retweeted something about our show last time.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah.
Social media.
And,
so, yes.
And of course, you made that mistake.
An interesting interview it was.
Oh, with Marjuka in Lapland. What a wonderful lady. And what an insight into gardening in the Arctic Circle.
If they've got light all day, you know, 24 hours in the summer, how quick do you reckon those weeds grow?
Oh, I know. You've got to have your wits about you.
You'd have to live on your allotment, wouldn't you?
Well, that's why you live there, you see.
Yeah. So I mean, I say now, you know, that the weeds have grown overnight.
Absolutely, yeah.
There, I mean, she must be turning her back and they must be like tripping.
Tapping her on the shoulder.
No. And so, I did like your comment about, you know, like you, I thought, you know, it being dark, you know, with no sun, it was dark. But of course, I'd never thought that there would be snow. The light from the snow would not make it dark.
You just wouldn't know, would you, really, unless you've experienced it? You know,
it's just, just something I'd never thought about. But I I thought that was a really interesting interview and something new. I thought that was lovely.
Great. So you made the mistake of retweeting one of our tweets for the show. And look what's happened. You're here. And
it's amazing how things go around, isn't it?
You fell for that one, you see. And but I was just fascinated about the Gardening for Disabled Trust, because it's been around quite a while, and probably years and years ago you came up with this idea of gardening for mental health, which is what everybody seems to be talking about now, and the benefits of that. And
I mean,
you've been doing it for years.
Over 15 years ago.
Yeah. So just give us a little bit of background then to the trust and how you became involved.
Right, yes. It's a registered charity, and it was set up 50 years ago by Mrs. Peggy Kinsey. And she was an inspired lady who, unfortunately, I never got to meet. But she observed that being outside in the fresh air, doing gardening, was helpful to well-being. And still, half a century later, you know, like you said, the value of horticultural therapy is well known. And we continue to award grants to those facing all kinds of mental and physical challenges, helping them defy their disabilities and making gardening possible again. Our clients tell us that these little grants can be life-changing. And I mean, I didn't even know this existed until I saw an advert in our local parish magazine, because we are a national charity, we are based in East Kent, East Sussex and Kent, to keep the cost down. Yeah. We really do run our charity on a shoestring, so that we can use more money for grants. So I saw an advert in the parish magazine and thought I'd get involved and join the committee, nine other people. And it's the rest, they say, is history.
Excellent. Yeah, and I've looked at your website there, and we'll give the web address out in a second, but there's some great facts and figures on there. Just last year, 2020, on your website, you state you helped 1,780 people, and these small grants that you talked about that you awarded over £41,000 just last year alone. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yes. Yeah, and to be honest, last year was less than the year before, you know, because a lot of people were shielding. They didn't feel that they could apply for grants last year. So I think this year will be another bumper year too.
I bet. Yeah, and I guess last year you were, because I guess you raise your money through donations, do you? I don't know. How does that sort of work?
No. It's mainly events.
Oh, is it now?
Yeah, there is an element of donations, but there's also events. Well, anything we can do to, because we have got some reserves, which we've obviously dipped into in the past year. But like you said, we've got to find somewhere between £40,000 to £50,000 a year just to issue the grants. And I mean, like I said, we run it on a shoestring. So our costs are about £3,000. And that's mainly for insurances, for events and things like that. Yeah. So we really do keep it. There's no, you know, swish offices and things. But so we try and do events. The past year was really odd because we started, and in the spring we try and do some talks and things.
Yes.
But that was, you know, we managed a couple of those, and then the plants fair and everything else we had planned was all cancelled.
So absolutely.
We thought, well, we can't keep dipping into our surplus funds.
Yeah.
So Rosie, who's also on the committee, she came up with the idea of, why don't we do a gardening tip book? So we thought, okay. So yes. Then the next thing you know, the whole project has now snowballed and the whole committee are now, we're sourcing gardening tips. And we got some from famous people such as Julian Clary, Carol Klein, Joanna Lumley, yes. Dame Helen Mirren.
Yeah,
and we got our
right.
patron, Alan Titchmarsh, to write a foreword for us. So
absolutely.
That was good. And suddenly,
yeah.
this book called Cuttings, a
yes.
cornucopia of gardening tips from
yep.
famous expert and green-fingered friends, had suddenly come together. So I think we first talked about it in sort of, I think, May, June. And by November, we were launching it with Mark Lane.
Ah, so, of course. Yes, yeah. And I tell you what, I mean, you kindly sent me a copy up here and I'm working my way through it. And it's incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's the kind of book you can just pick up and put down, and there's every page that I mean, you know, the whole idea of the book, it's just all these tips, isn't it, from professional gardeners to celebrities and everybody in between, really.
Exactly, yeah. And some were clients, which were really, you know, that's
yeah.
really nice as well, that they, you know, we got in touch with them and they wanted to give tips. I think, you know I'm biased because I'm on the committee,
yeah.
but I do, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're an amateur or an expert, whether you're a beginner or experienced. You learn something out of the book and it really is an asset. And I think it was really nice when Mark Lane launched it. It was all online because obviously we couldn't have
yes.
an event for that either.
Yeah.
But he just literally, and you can see it on our website, when he was doing the launch, he just picked up the book and he flicked through it, opened it up and read a tip out. Then he closed it, then he opened it, and you think he did it three times. Well, that shows that you're not looking through it to find a good one. Each one
yes.
has its own merits and was useful. It was just brilliant.
It is. And you know what? When I was working my way through it, there was I think it was, I'm just having a look here. I think it was Sandra Beck.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Sandra Beck. And yeah, I've got it here. An alternative for lavender. Which, of
yes.
course, goes very woody, doesn't it, over time and gets a bit tired and everything else. And with good old catmint. And,
yes.
And I saw this and I thought, I must have a go at that because I've got I don't know what the technical term for it. I call it a wiggly woggly path, a brick path down my back garden to an arbour at the end. And
No. Surely you could do Chinese or Japanese themed, couldn't you?
Yeah.
A path of... Some sort of path of contemplation or something.
Well, it is. I do contemplate at the end of my garden.
And the Chinese do use paths like that. So I think you're going to have to rename it apart from the wiggly path.
Well, I will do. And I just thought, what a great idea to put catmint down there. And when I was thinking about that, there's a lovely garden. I don't know if you'll know it, but it's up in my home county in Shropshire, Woolerton mm-hmm. Old Hall.
Fabulous place, yeah.
It's wonderful, wonderful there. And they've got a lovely pathway with catmint and the pita each side. And it's absolutely stunning, you know. So I thought, well,
yeah.
I might give that a go this summer, a little project to do. You
yeah, because,
so.
I mean, you know, we're on heavy clay down here.
Yeah,
and lavender
yeah.
just hates it.
Yes.
It, you know, it's not even the cold in the winter. It's just sat with its feet in water. It just hates it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
one handy tip is that obviously catmint is loved by cats.
Yes.
So if you do find yeah. that they are a nuisance, a good tip is to put a hanging basket, like inverted, over
right.
it.
Yeah.
So that you protect the main plant with the hanging basket upside down
right.
on the top, the wire one. And then it grows through and you never, ever then lose the main plant at the bottom sort of thing.
Wow, what a top tip. I can see yep. there's going to be a Cuttings 2 coming out.
But then, yeah, we might have to resort. Well, not resort, but we might have to do the follow-up this year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. If circumstances don't change quickly enough, we'll have to come up with another plan.
And again, you've got a few tips in there. Quinton's got a few tips in there as well.
And my mum and dad. And
oh, really? Yeah, yeah. And actually, I think I saw Nigel Slater, some recipes in the back as well, yeah. Which was great, isn't it?
People were just so generous. And it was, I think, apart from everybody wanting to be charitable, I think the other thing is that people really have learnt to appreciate whatever gardening space they have, and also, you know, their gardens, parks, whatever it is, gardens are now known to do you good, and it's an escape from what we're currently living in.
Absolutely.
So I think once we said what we were trying to raise money for, to get more disabled people back into their gardens, you know, people sort of, and this was a fundraising book, I think people really embraced it. And, well, you can see by the size of the book, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
They were very generous.
Yeah, I mean, it is just packed, as I said, with all sorts of information. You know, I'm looking at it now. I know I should be talking to you, but I'm...
No, carry on. This is a good endorsement.
I'm dipping into this book yet again, really. But there's all sorts of... there's 14 chapters there. I won't read them all out. But from design principles to watering and feeding, roots, fruits and leaves, essential kit, going wild. I think that was Jeff Beck as well. He let a lawn go wild, didn't he? And just mowed a section. And he was amazed at the bees and the flowers that just popped up that he'd never seen before.
We've always been sort of educated to mow lawns, sort of thing. And, you know, perhaps a stripe just makes it look tidy.
Yes.
And home here, I mean, my dandelions, I used to curse them because obviously they weed and they seed everywhere.
Yep, yep.
But I've embraced them now because I get this little flock of goldfinches who come in for the seeds.
Wow.
And you think, well, you know, all right, well, I'm going to just have loads of dandelions.
And they're wonderful just to watch, aren't they? Yeah, incredible. Yeah, and whoever came up with that five a month at the back there, just five little tips for each month of the year. I mean, it's great. Really, really great.
So, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
I think it really is. You know, it's only £10 plus postage and packaging. And it really, you know, it's a super book. And I'm, you know, more than happy to sort of push it wherever, because I just think I'm happy to put my name to it, sort of
absolutely.
Thing. And the charity's name to it.
Yeah. So where can people at the moment get hold? I know you're looking at other avenues where you can sell the book, but at the moment, where is it available?
Right, well, the easy answer is it's available from our website. The not so easy answer is it's our website is gardeningfordisabledtrust.org.uk. Sorry,
right.
Not very succinct.
No.
Email address, but it's available to buy on there. But like you said, we are trying to find stockists of our book for, you know, so whether, you know, once things allow that we can all get out and about, we would love to see it in sort of garden centres, nursery, open gardens, allotment shops. So if anybody wants to come forward, I don't mind whether they want to sell 10 copies or 1,000. We'd love them, you know, to supply them with books to sell. It would be great. So,
fantastic.
You know, all the time we can make revenue, we can get somebody else back out in their garden.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it's going for such a great cause, isn't it?
And, you know, if we sell one or two copies, you know, £10, it'll buy somebody an adapted tool to, you know, that they might be able to garden with.
Yes.
It's as simple as, it doesn't have to be, you know, lots of money. Yeah. I mean, you know, one of our big things that we give grants for are raised beds.
Yes.
You know, so if we sell sort of 20 or 30 books, that's a raised bed for somebody.
Perfect.
You know, so.
Yeah. And trolleys and special tools and all this kind of thing, really.
Yeah, and again, we also do greenhouses and polytunnels. And I mean, it might even be something as simple as a handrail, so somebody who's unstable on their feet can make it down the steps and into their garden.
This year, we've
had to adapt, the past year, we've had to adapt because obviously a lot of our clients have been shielding. So we've ordered, like, say, for an example, a raised bed for them and got it posted, you know, delivered to them. And then We've also included compost and some seeds because they've not been able to go out and get it.
Yes.
So yeah, we've just adapted and, you know, kept on going. So yeah.
Great. So the more of these we can sell, the better. So just run that website past us again. If there's anybody out
You're going to make me do this, aren't you?
I'm going to make you, because I know it's...
gardeningfordisabledtrust.org.uk.
Excellent.
Or otherwise, stick it into Google.
Yeah. If you just search Gardening for Disabled Trust, it's going to come up there, isn't it? That's probably the simplest way. Gardening for Disabled Trust. Just search that on Google. You'll find it there.
Gardeningfordisabledtrust.org.uk. Doesn't quite run off the tongue.
Excellent.
And if they're on our website, it would be lovely if people would like to join our mailing list. And then we can keep them informed of what we're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, events when they come up. We don't bombard them with emails. So it would just be nice if they wanted to keep in touch and we can tell them what's going on and
absolutely
what we've achieved.
Yeah.
And also, there is a newsletter that can be downloaded because we try and save on posting them out now. So the newsletter is also on the website.
Yes.
And so that is really good if people want to read about our clients and, you know, what we've given to people and what they've thought about what we've done for them. Because it really, there's some life-changing stories. You know,
yes,
we just sort of think, you know, it's a raised bed. But it means the world to somebody. It's, you know.
Yeah.
So you can read all the success stories and it's just lovely. So, yes.
Great. And there was another group that you got in touch with on Facebook, wasn't there? Just to give you an insight.
Now, when I joined the committee of Gardening for Disabled Trust, I obviously knew a lot about gardening, but I really didn't know a lot about disabilities. So I was very fortunate that through Twitter, funnily enough, I met the administrator for a group on Facebook, and it's UK Wheelers Unite. And I have been lucky enough to join them, because usually it's, you know, for wheelchair users, but they've allowed me to join them. And there's 2,000 people on this group. And they have been absolutely brilliant in keeping me up to date with what they're going through, they're very resilient people. But, you know, the day-to-day challenges and things they have to overcome, I really feel that I've got a great insight. So I just like to say thank you to them because they've been brilliant, just educating me in the, you know, pitfalls and, you know, pinnacles you could get to with being disabled and in a wheelchair. So,
excellent. Well, Anna, we're coming towards the end of our show, I'm afraid. It's just flown by. So thank you so much for, first of all, getting in touch and doing this, taking time out to have a chat with us here. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. So you look after yourself. Give our very, very best to all your colleagues there at Gardening for Disabled Trust as well.
Will do. And can I just say, you know, if people aren't, you know, if they don't go on the website, there's also Twitter, Facebook and Instagram we do. So they can all pop on there. And just thank you very much for the opportunity to come on here.
No problem. No problem at all. So, again, I'm sure we'll be linking up.
I hope Jake's well soon.
Yes. Poor old Jake. He's missed out, hasn't he? He would have loved that story about Elton John and everything else there. So would have loved
that. Well, tell him that one of the previous blogs on the web, because we have a weekly blogger on the website.
Yeah.
One of the guest bloggers was Charles Dowding that does the No Dig for gardening.
Yes.
So.
Wow, yes. Oh, he'd be looking that up. Yeah, once he can
stand up. He might have to embrace that now he's done his back in.
Well, he will. He will.
Either that or not move, isn't it?
Well, it serves him right for moving house twice in 18 months.
Who would? I mean, when did you last move?
Oh, about 11 years ago, 12 years ago. That was long enough.
It doesn't appeal, does it?
No, not at all. This is the last one. We're here to stay with me woggly path down the end of the garden.
Your path of contemplation.
Yes. If I can get my teeth around it, I'll say that.
There you go.
There you go. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Keep safe. Keep well out there. We'll be back next month. Hopefully, Jake will be back with us as well. Again, Anna, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Now, if you've got any gardening questions, just email them over to skywaveradiouk@gmail.com, or you can go on to Jake's Facebook page. That's Gardening Tips from the Village Idiot. Gardening Tips from the Village Idiot on Facebook. And don't forget, talking to Facebook and Twitter, you can do a search there for Gardening for Disabled Trust. Check them out. Check the website out as well. And make sure you look out for that book, Cuttings, which you can buy off their website. So that's Gardening for Disabled Trust. Right, that's all from me. You look after yourselves and we'll see you next time. Bye. You've been listening to Digging the Dirt, the allotment show with Russ and Jake.